Take off your jacket, because it's time to get deep under the covers with a loose read.
Oh yeah, it's time for loose reads. Morning, Nate.
Morning.
How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, but, yeah. Of course. We love having you on. You've got apparently a bit of a crazy book to talk to us about this morning.
I do have a bit of a crazy book, which is kind of my favourite type of book. Yeah. So I'm quite happy to be doing it. But it's The City Changes Its Face by Emer McBride. She is an Irish author. This is her third book. Mm. She kind of rose to prominence very suddenly when she won the Women's Prize in 2013 for A Girl's a Half-Formed Thing.
Mm.
Great titles also. Every single one of her books just has the most amazing title. And yet no one had heard of this book. Mm. And then it got on the list and like a few people bought it. And then it won. And then a bunch of people bought it. And I've talked to Jenna about this and she said no one had heard of it. Everyone bought it. Half the people that bought it came back in and were like, what the fuck is this? Yeah. What have you given me? This is this even a book?
Wow.
Wow. Okay. It got complaints.
And yeah, because, I mean, we'll get into why later, but it is, they're quite, she doesn't write like anyone else. Mm. And she put out another book called Lesser Bohemians in 2017, which won the Goldsmiths Prize, which is a great little prize for like essentially weird fiction. It's not as well known as the Women's or the Booker, but it's always worth paying attention to.
Okay.
And this book, The City Changes Its Face, actually has the same characters as Lesser Bohemians. It's kind of, they're both centered on a romance between Stephen and Eiley, who are, and this is the first thing which is a bit cooked about this book, is that Stephen is a 40-year-old actor turned film director.
Okay. And how old is Eiley?
20.
Oh,
so
no,
yeah,
no.
It's not great. The first book is them like getting together, and I actually haven't read it. So when I say you don't need to have read them to make sense
of
it,
that's a personal experience.
It's a personal experience. I actually, this is quite embarrassing because I'm like reviewing it on radio, but I didn't realize it was the same characters in the books until an hour ago when I was doing my last minute research.
And look,
so
that's fine.
I'm
but that's
very
kind of
prepared.
Good that like, it really means you don't have to have read the first one in order to know what's going on.
Exactly. Yeah. It just, they, this one, I saw someone say it's not so much a sequel as a variation. And I think that's quite a good way of putting it. So the Lesser Bohemians is them kind of getting together. And I would be quite interested to read it now because the age gap, I mean, it's always there, but it's not really mentioned. And I wonder if that that first book will go into that a bit more.
It's more of a prevalent theme in that first one. It's interesting.
Exactly. But the kind of reason that I'm Bright and that Women's Prize win was such a shock is her actual like writing sentence by sentence is very odd. It's amazing, but she, it's very stream of consciousness, and it kind of swaps the stream of consciousness writing with a lot of dialogue that's just like one line. Yeah, you can have entire pages which are just eight lines of conversation, and she breaks them up in a really interesting way by putting genuine spaces between words to kind of mimic how a conversation pattern would happen.
Oh, and that's amazing.
Also, occasionally, I have to admit, she will just entirely make up a word.
Cool. And I love that. I feel like that's a very Millie-coded thing to do.
That is totally what I would do.
But it reads in an amazing sense. Also, sentence by sentence, she'll just kind of do a fragment of a sentence that isn't really a complete sentence. But if it gets the meaning, I guess she asks, why do you need that full sentence? She'll just kind of move on. But I must admit, when I opened it, I was like, oh, whoa, what am I reading? But I kind of, how I look at it is, I remember going, I hope this makes sense, I remember going to Iwond, and I got out of Dublin, and I could recognise that the people around me were speaking English, but I did not recognise what they were saying.
Oh,
it was just, like, sounds that, like, sentences that I just, like, couldn't pass out. Mm-hmm. And then after a day or two, I just could. Something just happened in my brain, and it switched on, and, like, by the end of the trip, I was speaking with this weird, like, Frankenstein New Zealand Irish accent because I'd started to, like, mimic, which was horrible for everyone involved, and I'm sorry for anyone who heard me talking.
I'd like to hear your melded Irish New Zealand accent.
No one wants
really
to hear
like
that.
To.
Completely so involuntary.
Once you kind of adjust to her writing style, you're away laughing.
You're away laughing, essentially. Yeah. And in many ways, it's an easier reading experience because it's very sensation-based. And it works perfectly for this book because the main plot of it is kind of one night in a relationship that has fallen apart, in a sense. We know something traumatic has happened. We don't know what. Mm. We have interspersed with, like, little sections in the past, titled this, it's kind of titled Now, and then First Winter, First Summer, First Autumn, First Spring. And we can, throughout the book, you kind of see when this relationship goes wrong. But I think it really works for the writing style because you get that first moving in together, completely in love, which I think does just kind of distort your senses.
Oh,
rose-tinted glasses, man.
When you're besotted, like, the world is just a different place. Mm.
Exactly. And then you get, and for me, I was almost like, God, this maybe hits a bit too close to home with the kind of relationships which is faltering, where you get kind of who they are now overset with who they were then. The patterns that they were in aren't kind of working anymore.
Oh, man.
And the stream of consciousness and the dialogue bit works very well because they'll say, so you know when you're in a relationship and you've been in it for a while, it's starting to kind of end. You don't want to admit it, but it's starting to end. Yeah. And you say things that just get under the other person's skin.
Oh, man.
And it kind of, you were the only person who could say them. You were the only person who would know that this was kind of an attack or an expression of annoyance. And it all on that night leads up to this big argument where I think Iwi froze a jar of something that I think was pickled mustard, so fair enough, because that sounds awful.
Oh, wow, that would be an awful clean-up, awful skin sensation. Yeah, fuck
awful
that.
Clean-up. So that's kind of the main argument, but you can see that this is, and I mean, no arguments are built out of nothing. The argument has come from all the stuff we're seeing in the past, all the stuff we're seeing on this night of kind of trying to fall back into what they had, and they still love each other, and I think that's the most painful thing, and you can really see it in the sentences, is that kind of still caring deeply, and they're responding to this traumatic event, and that's also what I found was very cleverly done, and you know that something has happened to her, you don't know what, but you know that she wants to move on from it, and he kind of can't. There's a level of concern and fear, and I mean, it becomes quite clear what has happened quite quickly, but there's a level of fear that he can't seem to move on from, and you can't really blame him for doing that.
Okay.
And he kind of wants her to open up and wants her to be kind of safe, but she badly needs him to move on, in a sense. I don't know, it's two people who just know each other so well but can't bridge that gap.
Oh, man.
That's
breaks
kind
your
of
heart.
Formed. It does.
It
breaks
sounds
your heart.
Like a book of, like, many daggers. Like, at points, is it quite a hard read at points?
At
like,
points,
kind
it's
of
a hard read. Well, I haven't even got to the stuff that's mainly hard, which, and to be fair, this is one of the best pieces of writing I think I've ever read.
Wow.
You know he has a tragic past. Mm-hmm. You don't quite know what it is, but it's all her voice. And then it gets, there's also, okay, I feel like I have to add this because this was a very amazing plot point as well, was he has an estranged daughter who's 17 and she comes
and
stays.
20.
She's 20. Ooh. And it's not central, but it's part of what has broken this relationship, and it makes
that's
the
horrific
domestic space really interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's like, whose home is this? Like, you can't be a parent to this person, but also you can't be a sister because that's weird. And the whole thing is just, and that fractures them. But it gets to kind of part two of the novel, and he's working on an autobiographical film. And at some point, him, Stephen, the daughter, and Iwi go and watch it. And you get, it's the part of the film which kind of paradoxically is most descriptive, is a scene-by-scene description of this film back in his 20s when he's in London, and you realise there's kind of heroin addiction, he's completely lost. you start to see that his trauma is in kind of horrible amounts of physical and sexual abuse from his mother. And it all starts to make... Because you know that both of them are kind of broken, and then you get to this, and it all starts to make sense. But equally, it's an amazing thing to kind of read, because it's genuinely a scene-by-scene interpretation of this movie just inserted into a novel, interspersed with returns to the three of them in the cinema in her mind. And to me, that's a scene you would never write, because it's a nightmare from an author's perspective to just kind of break it up. But it's an incredible reflection on, like, film, particularly, because like, she's a film student, so she... It's not kind of scene by scene as a script would be. It's seeing the effects of different choices, different camera angles, but she's also got the personal history of him to know what this means. And I just thought it was... And it's also quite... I kind of see it as I'm being like, I can do normal descriptive writing. Everyone's being like, you're too weird. And then she does this, puts this descriptive, beautiful bit that any other author would be like, this is what I want to write, and goes, I can do that. I just haven't been. I've just been deciding not
Subtle
to.
Flex.
Actually, my choice.
Shout out to the person who's texted that they've just parked in Mount Eden listening to the rest of this before they go shopping at Time Out. Have we got this in stock on the shelves?
We do have this in stock. We've got 4 copies on the table. So, just hit in. It'll be there on the new release table.
This sounds... like an insane book, but something like a necessary journey.
I think necessary, and it is, I'll say this much, it is hopeful in the end.
Oh, that's kind of a... Oh, thank God, it was feeling a bit dire.
I would say, exactly, but it's kind of damaged people breaking apart and reconnecting, and there's kind of beautiful moments of reaching out for something, and... In the end, I think I would say finding it. I mean, it's never as simple as that. I think I didn't put it down thinking, oh, God, this is depressing. I put it down thinking, oh, that was a wonderful kind of journey of a book.
Okay.
Oh, awesome.
Oh, good. Well, okay, so we're talking about The City Changes Its Face by... Ima? Is that his name?
I have no idea.
Ima?
I have to admit. Ima?
It's an... You Those will
Irish
need your
need
my pseudo-Irish Irish accent for that. Another great Irish author on Loose Reads.
Thank you very much, Nate.
Thanks for having me on.
Thank you.
Of course. That was Loose Reads. Thanks, Time Out.
That was Loose Reads.